This is The Adam Ritz Show, a public affairs talk show touching on community, health, foundations, and more. The Adam Ritz Show is underwritten by Vibonomics, an audio out-of-home advertising marketplace and audio experience company. Info at Vibonomics.com. And now, from the Vibonomics studios, please welcome your public affairs radio host, Adam Ritz.
Good morning, good afternoon, whatever time it is where you are listening. We're glad to have you on board The Adam Ritz Show. My name is Adam Ritz, and we cover public affairs in style with some fun and some smiles, and we do it with our good friend Jay Baker. Hi, Jay. How's it going?
It is going great, Adam. And yes, many people say to us, why do you guys do public affairs? And we say it's because we genuinely love our audience. You know, some of the other stations will claim they love their audience, but we genuinely love our audience. And, you know, we want only the best for them. And that's with this show. We share some insider information on how to live your best life. And I actually feel sorry for those that are critics.
Now, we don't know for a fact that the other stations don't love their audience. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But we can tell you for a fact that we do love our audience.
We do. Yes, absolutely. You're right. It is hard to certify that the others may deeply care, but we love you. See, we have an extra level of commitment.
We just don't have any evidence to support either claim. So all we can tell you is that we love our audience. Jay, I want to start in 1978. I know that's a while ago. Where were you in 1978?
I was busy looking for a good fraternity to pledge. I was in college then and living the, you know, wild, carefree life of a youth.
That is, I love that we have that little generational difference between us. I was 8 years old in 1978. I think that puts me at about third grade. And you and I were both, even though we were at different ages or stages of our lives, we still probably both at the same time loved the song Too Much Heaven from the Bee Gees.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, once you got into your fraternity at that time, you know, today we can listen to Too Much Heaven from the Bee Gees. No one's going to give us any flack. Back then, as an 18-year-old, were you embarrassed to listen to the Bee Gees or Too Much Heaven, or was that cool?
Well, here's, you know, I will tell you the genuine observation that I had about music from that era is, you know, most young men were like, we're rock and rollers. We think disco is for, you know, for those that aren't engaged with the real world. But disco was the music that people danced to and partied to and had fun with. So you had to acknowledge that, hey, all forms of music have some validity. You know, you just didn't have the swagger that you would have if you didn't declare you were a Tom Petty or Kiss fan. You know how that goes.
So you could play the Bee Gees along with Kiss inside your dorm room or your fraternity room and not get into a fight.
No, but it was polarizing. As we found out later in life, you know, it's not fun unless it's polarizing. You know that.
Well, I found out something this week about the song Too Much Heaven from the Bee Gees that is pretty amazing. The Bee Gees donated that song to UNICEF, and they performed it at a UNICEF charity benefit concert in 1978 and donated the proceeds of the song to UNICEF. And over the years, that one song has generated over $11 million in royalties, and that money has gone to UNICEF.
Oh, that's great.
$11 million from one tune. So for all of the middle-agers listening now that used to make fun of people back in college for playing the Bee Gees, shame on you, because every time that song played, UNICEF received a few more dollars, up to $11 million it's raised for UNICEF. And I thought I'd mention what UNICEF is. If you're not familiar with this organization, that's been around since 1953, originally the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, which is the acronym UNICEF, officially United Nations Children Fund since 1953. It's an agency of the United Nations responsible for providing humanitarian and developmental aid to children worldwide. And they have $11 million more because of a little disco song called Too Much Heaven from the Bee Gees. Now, every time you hear that song, you can sleep well at night knowing that it's going to help some kids around the world.
No, that's good. And I think the other great point about this story is if you have two other brothers in your house and you both sing great and you all sing great harmonies, keep at your music career because it is certainly potentially lucrative.
You know, it's amazing the money that royalties generates. I have a side story here, I guess, that just popped into my head about the Bee Gees, sort of, from the 1977 soundtrack, Saturday Night Fever. I think that was 77. Saturday Night Fever soundtrack does not feature the song Lowdown by Boz Scaggs.
Right.
And in the movie, there is a dance scene where John Travolta and the female lead are practicing. They're in like a dance studio practicing. And originally, the song they were practicing to was Lowdown by Boz Scaggs. And at the time, when the movie makers and producers contacted Boz Scaggs and the record label and said, can we use this song in this movie? Boz Scaggs said no. He turned it down. So they redubbed a different song in that scene, and the song doesn't appear. Boz Scaggs' song does not appear on the soundtrack. Scaggs later said, decades later, that decision, that one little decision, has cost him upwards of $6 million in royalties because of the money that song would have made being played on that soundtrack.
Ouch.
So I guess the moral of that story is every little decision you make does have consequences. I don't know if they're $6 million decisions, but boy, that song should have been in the movie.
Yeah, music and royalties, they rack up over time. Well, as we head into the new year, everyone is probably sort of doing a self-inventory about some of your healthier habits. We've always talked about how resolutions can fall by the wayside, but it's never a bad idea to think in terms of your long-term health. And we will echo this sentiment that getting daily moderate exercise is one of the best ways to prevent cognitive decline, which is a worrisome thing. We've talked about Alzheimer's and dementia has become a greater risk, not only for older Americans, but also middle-aged Americans. New research, however, suggests that your blood pressure can also say a lot about your cognitive state. They actually now have tied blood pressure into your mental processes. And it's saying that if you are dealing with high blood pressure, and many Americans are, a new study says that adults with hypertension and high cardiovascular risk can lower their risk of cognitive decline with intensive blood pressure management. You probably know, Adam, we live in the world nowadays of great technology. You can get quite the blood pressure monitor through, you know, any popular service. Amazon certainly comes to mind.
And it's connected to your Fitbit. I know there's, you know, rings now. You can wear a ring on one finger that measures your blood pressure too. So, you know, technology's on your side.
Yeah, we're getting more and more input, and specifically, you want to keep an eye on high blood pressure because it can lead to a heart attack, stroke, heart failure, kidney problems, vision loss, diabetes, and changes in memory. So you've got to be very aware that that really is the cornerstone of your health, and it's been tied to cognitive decline. Meanwhile, high cardiovascular risk refers to your likelihood of experiencing a cardiac event. So obviously you want to stay out of your heart hospital emergency room. So we're just saying this to be careful and be aware. And yes, take advantage of these new technologies that allow you to somewhat effortlessly keep an eye on your blood pressure.
And to circle back to one of the first things you said here was daily moderate exercise. So I think a lot of times we hear the word exercise or health or healthy habits, and it's a little overwhelming, a little daunting to think, oh my gosh, I am just not prepared to go run 10 miles right now.
Right.
Nobody's suggesting you just start with something that, you know, excessive. It's just some moderate exercise, just some sort of movement, especially when the weather gets a little nicer. A simple walk around the neighborhood every evening is something that can help you long term.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct about that. And walking is a great moderate exercise. We are fortunate. The radio station that I work for has a lot of open space, if you will. There was a couple of stations that moved around, all that. And so thankfully, I can get easily a 3/4 mile to a mile walk inside the building. Now, it's not as big as a mall or something, but you'd be surprised if you use your noggin. There may be some places you can walk, even around a big store.
For sure. You don't even need a mall. I mean, the classic mall walkers, I know the mall that I go to has markings on the floor with an arrow to point out like the mile mark. So, and they want you to go walk there because they want you to maybe accidentally see something out of the corner of your eye and go buy it. So
sure.
If you don't have a giant mall to walk in, maybe that Costco membership can mean more than $1.50 hot dog for you. Go to Costco for the afternoon and walk through every single aisle 5 times. I mean, yeah. That'll take you an hour and you might hit 3 or 4 miles.
Well, and then on top of that, you'll be very aware of what is available at your Costco.
And then grab a hot dog on your way out for $1.50.
Yeah, so there are all kinds of different ways for you to get your steps in. And, you know, we don't want to be the guys that are like doing the lecture, but we do think that sometimes you take these steps and then it becomes just a little easier. The benefits of staying hydrated can't be overstated. From better looking skin to improved mood and clarity, drinking water is one of the best, easiest, and cheapest things you can do for your health.
I just took a drink. I just took a swig as you were saying that. It's kind of like if you ever say, how's your posture? As soon as you hear the word posture, you immediately sit up straight. And whenever
Absolutely.
I hear anybody say you should drink more water, I immediately take a drink of my water. Because I'm guilty of that, Jay. I don't drink enough water. I try to. I have one with me at all times, but I'm just, I find it, I don't want to say difficult, but it's, let me say it this way. It's so easy to drink water when you're thirsty. When you're hot and thirsty, that's easy to drink water. And especially during these months, I'm not hot or thirsty. So I actually
right.
have to force myself to remind myself, hey, pick up that cup and drink some of that water.
Well, you raise a great point about that. That's why they do try to get you. We live in a country where people love their soft drinks. And, you know, I bet you know colleagues, I certainly do, that really enjoy diet sodas. So, you know, that diet soda at just totally at their fingertips is not particularly good for them. But many of those people that I know have substituted now, like you said, have the water nearby because you'll end up drinking more almost accidentally if it's right there available for you.
You know, Jay, I have a Diet Coke trick that I'd like to share with you.
Good. I'd like to hear it because I used to be very addicted.
I would say I was too, and maybe still am. And I think possibly a physician listening to my story might shake his head right now and say, you're still drinking too much Diet Coke. But here's how I cut back. I used to drink four or five Diet Cokes through the day. Definitely one or two with lunch, one or two sure. with dinner. And then I'd have, you know, one or two at night with popcorn watching a movie. And I have cut back to one a day, if that. And I consider it a treat now. And it's almost so flavorful that it, well, it is flavorful, much more than water, that it, my mind perceives the Diet Coke right now as an absolute dessert, like a treat.
Right.
So I drink water through the day. I drink water with my lunch. I drink water with my dinner. And at night, if I do make popcorn, which isn't every night, but if Melissa and I share a bag of popcorn from the microwave, I'll make a Diet Coke. And my low-calorie popcorn and my Diet Coke is enough for me to feel like I'm the old Adam is having a giant piece of chocolate cake or a piece of coconut cream pie. It's like a treat. It's an absolute dessert at that point in the day. And now when I drink Diet Coke for lunch, which happens occasionally, when we go get pizza or a burger, I mean, it's hard to drink water with a burger. Got to have a Diet Coke with a burger. When I take that drink of Diet Coke in the middle of the day, it's almost, and it's diet, it's almost too sweet. I've trained my mind to think that's a dessert now.
Well, it is funny as you say that. It really does result, you know, most health habits result in altering how you think about things.
So,
you know, as you and I have always said, we really wish we could do a public affairs show that just said, do what you want when you want. However,
yeah,
we might be steering you in a bad direction, you know.
So, of course, I guess the ultimate advice here is before you take any dietary advice from me or this show, consult your physician.
Yes. Later, if you say I took dietary advice from disc jockeys, people might look at you thinking, hey, you've lost your mind. But it is a positive thing, I think, as you said, to somehow create a mechanism for yourself to actively consume less diet colas, because I'm with you. They're delicious. I really, truly enjoy them. I try to limit them to one or less a day myself.
And
I think you have to.
You have to. My hats off to my sister. She was a 6 to 7 Diet Coker a day. She gave it completely up. She only drinks water now.
Wow.
So I'm sure the Diet Coke executives listening aren't excited about their sales plummeting from people that are trying to get a little more healthy. But I think, you know what? I think they'll be okay. I think they'll still get their bonus this year and they'll be able to take their families on a vacation.
Yeah, they're doing okay with or without us. No, you're absolutely
correct.
Can
you imagine? Why did Coca-Cola fall off the NASDAQ? Well, it must have been the Adam Rich Show.
That Adam Rich Show. There they were again, bad-mouthing Diet Cokes. So we're not bad-mouthing. We're just saying it's like everything. We know people that love ice cream, but you have to have moderation, because if you have lots of ice cream every day, you will have health consequences. We wish the rules were different, but they're unfortunately not.
Again, we'd love to tell you to do what you want.
We'd love to, but we can't with a clear conscience. Here's interesting. You know, what they always tell you about the future. This is coming, that's coming. This probably makes some sense. The humanoid AI robot not only is coming, it could be happening sooner than you might expect. This is from a professor of mechanical engineering at Northwestern, so he knows his stuff. Dr. Ed Colgate says there's a lot of optimism that ChatGPT level models for robotics will be soon upon us. As you probably know, the reason why ChatGPT is powerful and is gaining a lot of attention is because it is a conversational platform for you to access AI, artificial intelligence.
It is, it's scary. It's exciting. It's, you know, it could help in so many different areas of life. I saw this week that there was $500 billion invested this week into AI technology to help, you know, cure disease.
Right.
It's a whole new world. And if this guy at the University of whatever is saying that the AI robots are coming, you know, it's A, yes, it's scary. B, okay, let's see what they can do. You know, maybe at 10 o'clock at night when I sit on my couch, they'll go to the kitchen, make me some popcorn, and get me a Diet Coke.
Well, you and I have worked with a couple of bosses that we thought were robots. So this is not too unexpected for us.
We've been practicing it in a sarcastic way,
yes. Yeah. But they said that humanoid robots could be making their appearance by the end of the year in places like car factories, warehouses, manufacturing facilities, research institutions, and even people's homes. Now, would you welcome a humanoid robot in your home, Adam?
Not a chance. Not a chance. And you're saying by the end of the year? By the end of this year?
By the end of this year, we could start to see more humanoid robots. Doesn't mean there's going to be hundreds of thousands of them or millions of them, or every home is going to have one. But it just says that we're breaking the barrier down between the actual successful humanoid robot and reality, you know?
You know, my initial reaction was absolutely not, but now I'm kind of smelling the extinction of the honey-do list. There is no honey-do list if there's somebody else in my house that can do everything on the list. So maybe
if there's a robot, yeah, that can do that.
Maybe I welcome robotic Jeeves into my home by the end of this year. Now we're talking cost. How much is one of these 6-foot humanoid robots going to cost me?
If he is programmed for leaf removal, I am all ears. Tell me more. Yes, absolutely.
Money well spent on that robot.
We have done this story in the past. You know, there are certain eras of your life where work can get in the way and you don't really worry about your sleep. Other eras, you may worry about your sleep. You may worry about your diet. And these do come at different times. In fact, they did a recent study that stated that sleep becomes ever more important past your 40s due to other health concerns. And even the way you metabolize certain foods and even alcohol can alter as you get older. Well, the Cleveland Clinic is weighing in on this, and they're offering some tips. This is for dietary changes. So obviously there may be other lifestyle implications, but you may notice as you get a little older that certain foods just don't taste the way they used to. Have you noticed any changes, Adam?
Yeah. Yes, I have. And nothing's popping in my head. I know I just had this inner monologue within the last 6 weeks because I'm like, I ate something that I was like, I used to really love this stuff. And now I could take it or leave it. I can't recall what it was. I will say that some of this has to do with my new Diet Coke strategy, the way it tastes to me now. It tastes so sweet, like a dessert, whereas a few years ago, I would chug them all day because I was just thirsty. So yeah, I think my palate is changing a bit.
Well, and that's kind of what they're getting at. One thing they pointed out too, and this happens for a lot of us, especially when it comes to spicy foods, certain foods now may actually cause you dietary upset that just didn't happen, like, let's say, a year ago or 2 years ago. So they do want you to keep an eye on that. Registered dietitian with the Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Craig's Dino. And if you've got a name like that, you know your stuff.
I agree. Dr. Dino, I'm listening to him.
Dr. Dino, make sure that you're getting, here's the biggies. They want you to get enough calcium, vitamin D, vitamin B12, and fiber in your diet. You know, if you get more fiber in your diet, you'll start to naturally eat better. Have you noticed that?
I have not noticed that, but I want to put it to the test. I want to try that.
Fruits and vegetables tend to be a little higher in fiber. And, you know, they always say, eat your fruits and veggies.
So if you get more calcium, vitamin D and B and fiber, it'll help you do what now with your diet?
It will make sure that you are getting a nice, well-rounded diet, because what Dr. Dino is telling us is that certain foods may not agree with us like they did, and certain foods just don't have that same taste. I know the other day I had a kind of a famous sandwich here in the Midwest, you know, a tenderloin sandwich. And when I ordered it and ate it, I went, not that exciting. Before, it was like, oh, you've got to try this restaurant. They've got the best in town kind of approach. So what they're saying is that's your body's way of saying, if you don't have the cravings for it, it's not really serving you anymore.
I don't know. My worldview just completely shattered. I didn't think I would live in a world where the great Jay Baker would not enjoy a breaded fried tenderloin sandwich.
You know, as good as it sounds, you just saying it out loud. I'm just saying I don't have this overwhelming knock someone out of the way to get to it that I once had. I would still allow you to buy me one in a heartbeat.
I got the perfect place. Now I'm, you know, you say posture, I'll sit up straight. You say water, I'll take a drink of my water. You say breaded tenderloin, I'm making reservations at a certain restaurant.
I'm ready. Hey, Adam, do you know your credit score? You don't have to say it out loud, just wondering if you know.
I do. I absolutely know my credit score.
That's good, because it turns out in a new survey that 73% of Americans don't check their credit scores on a regular basis.
That's a pretty high number, 73%.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would have guessed it would have been. Maybe I would have guessed, maybe that's close. I guess I would have said 20% of Americans don't know their credit score. But you're saying 73% don't know it, they don't check it, they don't know it, they have no idea.
Well, basically, it's hard to parse out whether they know their score or not, but they're not very engaged with keeping track of it. And you just hit the nail on the head. 27% of Americans not only don't know their credit score, they don't check or interact in any way whatsoever. So to them, it's a non-existent thing. The reason we're bringing it up is it does have a direct effect, not only on your credit, but potentially where you live and what kind of job you may have, because believe it or not, your employer will check your credit score.
They want to know your financial responsibility before they give you the keys to their financial kingdom. And if you hopefully are in a position someday to purchase a home, that number is instrumental in deciding what you're going to pay for the next 30 to 50 years of your life.
Yes, absolutely. So as homes become more affordable and hopefully interest rates come down, we want you to be able to live the dream. So I would say check on your credit score, at least be aware of it and know that you can affect it in a positive way.
And as we end the show, that was nice. I'll give you hats off, Jay. That was very nice of you the way you asked me, do I know my credit score? But you don't have to say it right now. Jay, I'll counter. How much money do you make in a year? But no, don't answer.
I was getting ready to say $12.
Oh, man, if we could only be so lucky. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. If you want to hear this show in podcast form, they're listed on our website, all of our past episodes, in fact, adamritzshow.com.
The Adam Ritz Show is recorded live in studio at the Vibonomics Worldwide Headquarters. Learn more about the Vibonomics audio out-of-home marketplace at Vibonomics.com. For information on this broadcast, including past on-demand episodes, interview submissions, and syndication contacts, visit AdamRitzShow.com.